Hello and welcome back, everyone, to the Chaos Ball Podcast. Thanks for tapping in. Week 3, third episode of the regular season. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling better about the Seattle Mariners. They had a good week. But before I do anything, I'm going to start you off with a little question here. Who do you think is the all-time leader in ERA for your Seattle Mariners? And I'll give you a second to answer this question. You think you got it? I mean, listen, it's the usual suspects at the top of this list. It's people you might guess who would be first. My first guess would have been Felix Hernandez, and that would have been correct. But also, if you guessed Hisashi Iwakuma, Randy Johnson, or James Paxton, you'd also be correct, because there's a four-way tie for best ERA in Mariners history for a qualified starting pitcher. It's 3.42, and it's those four guys I said: Felix, Iwakuma, Randy Johnson, and James Paxton, a four-way tie for the top of that leaderboard. I was just going through this a few days ago. I was bored, and I had no idea. If you knew, then you definitely looked at this more recently than I did, but that's pretty funny. 3.42 on the dot for all four of those guys. Super interesting. All four great pitchers did phenomenal work for the Seattle Mariners. Out of like how many innings they threw, I mean, Felix Hernandez probably threw the most for the Mariners, I would imagine, but I wish Felix was the out on number one, but you know, you can't have everything in this world. But that was just a fun little stat I wanted to throw at you to start the show. Shout out to all four of those pitchers. Now, what have the Seattle Mariners been up to? They are on a hot streak right now, theoretically. Three-game win streak. They just swept the Reds after losing 2 of 3 to the Cubs at home. They came home after a tough road trip where they won 2 of 6 against Milwaukee and Toronto. They come home to face the NL Central. They drop the last two games of the Cubs series. Very close games. Really unfortunate to lose those games. Really close games. Except for one of these. All six of these games are pretty close. I feel like these teams are all hovering around the same frequency right now. If the Mariners were in the NL Central, we'll talk about the division in a second, but these teams all feel like mid-80s wins teams to me, with maybe ceilings, if things go right, like 90 wins. So it's not surprising that things were pretty close. I mean, they took the first game of the series against the Cubs 4-2, and they lost 4-1 and 3-2. And then they destroyed the Reds 9-3 in the first game. The offense came alive. It was the first time they had scored over 6 runs in a game. The last game against Toronto, they did score 6 on the dot, but this was the first time they scored over 6 off the back of a really good start from Kirby. And then Logan Gilbert and Bryce Miller had phenomenal starts the next two games as the Mariners went 3-1 and 5-1. And that puts the Mariners at 9-10 now overall. And checking the standings of the AL West here right now, the Seattle Mariners are squarely in third place. There's no ties in this division right now. Texas Rangers won today as I'm recording this. They're 10-9 in first. The Angels are 9-9 in second, holding on to the second spot. Mariners 9-10 third. The Oakland Athletics, yes, the Oakland Athletics, 8-11, off to a great start for the Oakland A's. I gotta say, I've watched a couple of these A's games this year. It's been fun. Dare I say fun? I talked about it in my preview. They have interesting ball players on that team, and Mason Miller is an absolute animal out of the bullpen. And then last place. Oh no, last place. 6-14. The Houston Astros. The brutal start to the year for the Astros. I implore you to not. I repeat, don't do it. Don't go look at Jose Abreu's Baseball Savant page. Just don't do it. Don't do it. They do have Verlander coming back, I think tomorrow when I'm recording this, but today if you're listening to this on drop day. But that's how the division is shaking out. I mean, it's really close. I have a feeling it's going to be pretty close all year, but you know, we've played 19 games, so how much can I really take away from this? I think the Astros are The Astros are probably fine. I think their pitching is definitely a concern. I highlighted that in the preview, but I think their offense is going to be fine. And the A's, I don't know if the A's are going to play close to 500 ball all year, but I mean, Mark Kotze, shout out to him. I think his pregame goal for these guys was like play 500 baseball. And it's a lot of young guys with a chip on their shoulder, and it, you know, they're not trying to move the team, and it can't be easy with all the noise around that team to be playing for them right now, but they're doing it and they're playing pretty well. So Mariners just right in the middle, playing better ball right now, though. The pitching has been absolutely phenomenal. It's been, I don't want to say historically good, but we'll say it's been kind of a return to normalcy, I guess. They had a really tough start to the year. I think both it was just not amazing pitching by the starters and the bullpen, but also I think they definitely got a little unlucky, and that can really make those ERAs look ugly in the first half of the season. I mean, it'll be like July, and the pitching staff will probably be humming by then like it is now. Maybe not as good as it's been the past week, but the pitching staff's going to be pretty good all year. We're going to look back on a couple of these starts in April, like Kirby giving up 8 runs and like Luis Castillo got dinged for a lot. We're going to look back on these starts like, man, that is, take that start from April out of his ERA and it probably goes down a point. We're going to look at that Kirby later in the year for sure, after that Guardians game he had, so unlucky. But they're humming. The Mariners starters, the last 7 games, 1.83 ERA, 44 and two-thirds innings pitched, only give up 9 earned runs, 6 walks, and 44 strikeouts. Before Logan Gilbert's start against the Reds to cap off the sweep, was that the sweep? It might not have been. I think that was game 2. But they set a franchise record, 35 consecutive innings without a walk, which is amazing. And it's emblematic of their style. I think we've seen it the past 2 years, but especially going into last season, after we were going to see a full season of Luis Castillo and a full season of Kirby, Logan Gilbert in his third year, and then, you know, these rookie pitchers come out of nowhere and they're, you know, fitting the similar mold of these Mariners starters, which is definitely an organizational what? Attitude? Identity. That's the word I'm looking for. They just go at you. They're not like the most elite strikeout starting pitchers. I mean, you have Luis Castillo and Gilbert, who are probably your top two like K guys, but again, Kirby's not an elite whiff or strikeout guy, and Bryce Miller and Hancock and Wu, maybe they will be, but they just get a lot of weak contact. But they just attack, they attack the zone, and they don't want to give away free passes. They're going to trust their stuff in the zone, and it works for them, and it's great. It's awesome to watch. It's been refreshing. It's been, the past week was awesome. The offense started to look at least better. I mean, we know the offense isn't going to be this bad all year. We know that. We know it's April. But we knew the starters weren't going to be this bad as well. And this week they kind of remedied that and have absolutely shoved. And this is without Brian Wu, the out-and-out fifth starter. And without Gregory Santos and Matt Brash in the bullpen. The bullpen's been really solid. And you got to think when they get those guys back, it's only going to get better. Hancock has definitely been the worst starter out of the 5, but he's shown signs that he can probably start in the big leagues. And I think he's going to be an amazing depth 6th man to have once Brian Wu comes back. So it's been awesome. It's been great. And now I'll kick it off. What am I really going to talk about today? I am going to talk about 2 players in particular and then finish with just some random Mariners notes of the week. I'm going to talk about Logan Gilbert a little bit right now. Talk about specifically his pitch arsenal, what it looks like starting this season, the strengths and maybe weaknesses if he has any. And then where it's come from when he debuted 4 years ago. And then I'm going to take a look at Ty France. We're gonna check the Ty France back meter and see where we're at on that. Is he back? Is he not? Is it too early to tell? It's probably too early to tell, but I'm going to delve into his numbers. They've been super interesting to start the year. So that's where we're at. And just to get into it, let's talk about Logan Gilbert, who we're going to go back to the Mariners career ERA conversation. Those top four guys are all tied for the first spot. Number five is Logan Gilbert with a 3.68 career ERA with the Mariners. So really awesome to see him on this list. And boy, has he been shoving this season. It's been awesome to watch. He's been absolutely our best pitcher by far. Bryce Miller's start has been awesome too, but Logan's has been even more impressive. And I'll get into why here. He has been one of the best pitchers in baseball to start the year. And so far, he has started four games. So, you know, it's still early, but the signs are here. And we know he's a good pitcher. So it's not like we have to really take him being good with a grain of salt here. But he's thrown 27 innings in those four starts with a 2.33 ERA to go along with a 3.42 FIP and a 3.02 xFIP. So, I mean, it's probably safe to say he's not going to have that 2.3 ERA all year. I don't think anyone really is capable of putting together a year like that. That's like a peak Kershaw, like that Zach Greinke year. Like that would be insane to have. Even like a sub 3 is insanely hard. So those peripheral numbers are not that surprising, but even those are absurd. They're so good. He has struck out 29% of the guys he's faced this year and only walked 4%. Both would be career bests. Last year, he set a career best in walk rate with 4.7, and he's only walking less guys this year. His rookie year when he pitched half a season basically his rookie year, so that's a good enough sample, was his best K percentage actually at 25.4. So that would be by far 29, even if he is 27, 28 ending the year. That's still by far his best K percentage of his career so far. Just has been phenomenal, and I think it's a credit to what he's done with his pitch arsenal. He has tweaked it like a lot of pitchers do every year, but he's really changed it this year. And if you look at his pitch arsenal compared to his rookie year when he came up, it is completely different, and it's really impressive how he's managed to put together great numbers since he came up as a rookie while changing this arsenal. And really, like, he has Cy Young looking stuff right now. The way he's carrying himself on the mound too, he's just been dominant. And his location has been better this year. Just everything has been better. But I will dive into his pitch mix because it's just so interesting this year. He's throwing a cutter that looks phenomenal. Before I get into the specifics, his cutter, I just wanted to say this, his cutter currently and the Stuff Plus leaderboards is number one. It's the best cutter among starters in the league at a 146 Stuff Plus, which is ridiculous. I mean, he's thrown 57 of them, so, you know, it's not like the biggest sample, and Stuff Plus will normalize as the season goes on. But to start the year, 146 Stuff Plus for any pitch is absurd. And his slider also is 147 Stuff Plus, which is second among starting pitchers. Slider's been awesome this year, but that new cutter, it looks phenomenal. And just to give you a sense of where that's at compared to the rest of the pitchers, it's number one by far. If you know ball, then you can probably guess who number two is. It's Corbin Burns, and his Stuff Plus cutter right now is 128. So a full 18 points lower. And then the next one after that is Marcus Stroman and Cutter Crawford tied with 111. Like, good Lord. His cutter's been awesome. But his pitch mix this year, it's a split finger, it's a cutter, it's a four-seam fastball, it's a slider, and then it's an occasional curveball or sinker. The sinker he's thrown three times this year. He threw it eight times last year. I just don't really think that's part of his pitch arsenal. I feel like he's not going to throw that at all going forward, especially based on how good the cutter and slider and fastball have been. And the curveball, he came up throwing the curveball a good amount. You threw it a lot in the second year. You threw it a decent amount last year. But he has basically eliminated that in lieu of the slider as his main pitch, off-speed pitch. So he's throwing his four-seamer and his slider this year 30.8% of the time for both of those pitches, equal usage. He's throwing the split finger 16% of the time, the cutter around the same 16%, and the curveball about 5%, and then the sinker is less than 1%. So the sinker is really a non-factor here. But four-seam slider, that it was his bread and butter last year, and he's throwing less four-seam fastballs this year and more sliders. That split finger, we saw him debut it last year. It was filthy. I think it's even better this year. I think he's given up one hit on it, and it was a weak ground ball in the infield that Drake Fairley beat out. He has a 56.5% whiff percentage on the splitter, which is crazy. And pair that with this new cutter and like a curveball that he's going to throw in there a couple times, just to, you know, keep him off balance. That is a really good pitch mix. And go all the way back to his rookie year. He came up, and we knew coming up he was a fastball, like four-seam fastball and slider, but the main pitch was that fastball. That was his bread and butter fastball, and he has, you know, he's stuck with that in his career. And part of what makes it special is not only like the velocity, he averages 95 to 96 on it, which is really solid velocity, but since coming up, he's been one of the elite starting pitchers in Major League Baseball in terms of extension, which is basically measures in feet how close a pitcher releases the ball to home plate. And he currently is in the 100th percentile this year. He was his rookie year, and then last 2 years he was in the 99th percentile. So basically he's throwing the fastball pretty hard, but it's leaving his hand so close to the plate. The perceived velocity is definitely more than 95. That's part of what makes it special. The way he throws it, there's just a lot of ride through the zone on it. It's a great fastball. He's stuck with it his whole career. But his rookie year, he threw it 61% of the time. Because it was, you know, he didn't have very good secondary stuff his rookie year at all. His slider, like, there was definitely some encouraging signs, but it wasn't a good pitch. His changeup that he came up with was not a good pitch. His curveball, he didn't throw much, but also not a good pitch. And then he comes out his second year. He's throwing the fastball a little less, but still over 50% of the time. He's going more curveball and about the same slider. And the fastball continued to be a really good pitch. The changeup, he actually worked into a decent pitch. Same with the curveball, but that slider still was not a great pitch. It was not a very good pitch. Go to 2023, his third year, and he's throwing less fastballs. He has decreased his fastball usage every year. It was down at 42%. He remade his slider, basically. His slider was an elite pitch last year. His fastball evened out to not even being a great pitch. But the slider was great, and the new split finger he came out with last year was awesome. He threw less curveballs, and the curveball wasn't a great pitch. And then, like, he threw 8 total sinkers last year. Again, sinker, non-factor here. But that jump from 2022 to 2023 of his slider and how good it got last year was phenomenal, paired with a really new splitter. That was great. All of it would have been better if his fastball was a little bit better. In terms of run value, it was a 0 last year, and the year before it was 12 with 10% more usage, so, you know, factor that in, but it was not an amazing fastball last year. The characteristics were really similar, but he got a lot less swing and miss and a lot more hard hits on that fastball because I think guys eventually are like, okay, we're just going to sit on this fastball and make you prove that your off speed is good enough. And he did that with the slider, but guys still sat fastball, and sometimes if he's not locating that fastball well or just up in the zone and it's a little bit down in the zone, guys will hammer that pitch. But that's where his stuff was at the end of last season. It was still, you know, fine fastball, but really good slider, and then an interesting splitter that proved to be a really good pitch that moving forward he was obviously going to work on. But really, it was the 2022 to 2023 jump in the slider that was like, whoa. It was, I don't even know what he did to it. He basically got it to sweep less, but made it into a gyro slider, like I've talked about. He made it less of a sweeper and more of a vertical slider. So it's compared to league average, it moves 2 inches lower than the average slider. And horizontal movement, it's 2.5 inches below league average. So it doesn't sweep as much anymore. He gyroed it. So it just is a harsh dive slider. And that really, really worked for him and his delivery. And then you go into this year, and it's like, okay, maybe he needs to throw a little bit less of the fastball so guys can't sit on it, or just work on the command, because the slider is great. And the split finger looked great, and you could only imagine he's going to work on it in the offseason, and it's going to look great again. And it does. Those three pitches this year have looked awesome. His fastball has been great. I think throwing it less is definitely helping. I think he's locating it a little bit better. His slider looks more or less the same as it did last year. It is getting even more downward movement on it last year, so it's moving even more vertically. And then the split finger looks awesome. The split finger, I think, is just, he's repeating what he did last year and just throwing it with more confidence this year. I feel like it's playing better off more slider usage and less fastball usage. And it gets really, really good arm side movement on it. Just a really good pitch. You can throw it dead zone to right-handed hitters or low and away to left-handed hitters. A really good pitch to attack both guys. And then he's like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to throw a cutter in there. And the cutter has been awesome. I told you the stuff plus numbers. His cutter has been great. And he's throwing that around the same amount as his splitter. So his fastball and his slider, around 31%. And split finger cutter, both are around 16%. And that's essentially his pitch mix with a 5% usage of curveball this year. And it's been awesome. It gives him so much stuff to play with against both handedness of hitters. The fastball will work against both because he rides it up there in the zone. If he can locate it, it's a great fastball. The slider works low and in to left-handed hitters and just low in the zone. It just disappears. And right-handed hitters, it also, you know, low and away. Even though it doesn't move quite as much horizontally, it's still going to be just a low and away pitch to locate. It's going to be really good. The split finger, like I mentioned, dead zone in on a right-handed hitter, low and in, if he locates it well and doesn't leave it over the zone, which he hasn't been. And even if you do leave a splitter over the zone, it's got so much late downward movement on it, guys often swing above it and just ground out. And that was the hit that he's given. That was the one hit. It was a really weak ground ball on that pitch. And then this new beautiful cutter is kind of the opposite of the split finger, where he can dead zone that pitch to lefties low and in, and that's kind of a lethal out strikeout pitch. And then also he can locate that, like, you know, low and outside to right-handed hitters. I'd probably throw it more to lefties if he can really locate it. But also, similar to the split finger, even if you kind of leave it in the zone, it has so late, little downward movement to just kind of screw with the swing path a little bit to get guys to roll over on it. The split finger and cutter can work both as like out pitches or just complete wipe out whiff pitches, along with a slider, and then mix in the great fastball. And it's so funny, if you go to Baseball Savant to look at his pitch percentage by season, the fastball is like the not stonks graph. It's just going down and down and down. And then these new pitches just keep randomly appearing. Like, he had a knuckle curve. He's got rid of the knuckle curve. And then all of a sudden the split finger comes in. And then this season there's this little boop. There's this little cutter that's all of a sudden appeared on the graph. And he's been so good. And I think, obviously, he's not going to put up a sub 2.5 ERA all year, but the stuff plays. I'm so confident in him moving forward through the rest of this year with this stuff. That cutter is really what's been so impressive to me. And his pitch mix and arsenal's come so far. So that is Logan Gilbert's pitch arsenal. It's just been phenomenal. And I really enjoy watching Logan Gilbert pitch. I will say it. And it's crazy he's walking even less guys this year too. His weakness is always just giving up hard contact. He's kind of done that since he's come up. A lot of it has been fastball. I mean, again, if you throw the fastball in the zone as much as he does, it's going to get hit pretty hard occasionally. That's really the issue with Logan Gilbert, but that is what plagues a lot of guys with really good stuff who are really good starters. So if that's the only thing he's really worried about, like, he'll give up a home run every now and again that's hit really hard, but that is really his only weakness, and it's because he's living in the zone a lot. And the fastball is just not an elite, like, whiff pitch. It's going to get me over. It's going to be the pitch he starts the at-bat with. He needs a strike, and that's it's still a really good pitch. So I'm so impressed by him this year. It's been awesome to watch, and I'm so excited to keep watching him. So that was the little deep dive into Logan Gilbert's pitch mix, and now we will transition to looking at Ty France. Is he back? I don't know. Maybe. I'm conflicted about this because I championed him having a bounce back year this year after just an absolutely dismal 2023. It was just not good at all. But he went to Driveline in the offseason. I think he definitely got a little unlucky last year. I looked at his swing take numbers and I was like, how can a guy be so bad at pitches in the middle of the zone? And part of it definitely is a swing. Part of it, I think, is just unluckiness. And on that topic, don't look at J.P. Crawford's swing take numbers right now. He is like negative 15 runs on pitches right down the middle of the plate. It's not good. Maybe I'll talk about J.P. next week. But we're talking about Ty France here. So his raw numbers aren't that impressive. Not really at all. It's actually... his raw numbers, just by looking at them, is kind of a step back. OPS-wise, his OPS is 677 on the young season with 61 plate appearances. So again, you know, it's only April. But that's 30 points, just about lower than last year's 703, which is already bad. And then you look at other of these pretty basic numbers here. Obviously, he's hit no home runs yet. He's not the biggest home run hitter. I mean, he topped out at 20 in 2022. The walk numbers are encouraging. He's drawing almost 10% walks, which was up from last season's 6.5%. But that comes along with a strikeout rate that has increased 7% from 17.6 to 24.6. And then isolated power of 0.056, which is really not good. He's also sporting, weirdly, a 375 BABIP. Along with these numbers. So a 375 BABIP with that low of ISO and a 677 OPS with a slugging percentage lower than the OBP. His slugging percentage is 333. His OBP is 344. All of that's not really good at all. That's actually quite bad. That's like, if he continues down this path for another few weeks, I might press the panic button and it might be demotion, trade, DFA, trade for a first baseman type beat hours in here, but not yet, because let's pop the hood. All right, let's pop the hood here. Take a look at the engine, and the underlying numbers are pretty good. The underlying numbers are actually pretty solid. He's chasing around league average. He is not really whiffing a whole lot. He's whiffing a little bit better than league average. Obviously, the strikeout numbers, those are, like, you know, roughly league average. But let's take it over to the hard hit rate and the barrel rate. And they're damn near elite right now. Again, very small sample, but his barrel rate is 10%, which would be his best of his career by far. It was at 6.8 last season. His exit velocity average is 93 miles an hour, which is the top 9% of the league right now. And with the 375 BABIP that he has and the 278 average, his expected batting average is 322. His current slugging is 415. And his expected slugging is 532. That is 200 points lower, which is insane, because his hard hit rate is 57.5%. That is the top 4% of the league right now. So these numbers to me look great. He is hitting the ball hard, really hard. He is not only doing that, but it's coming with barrels. So he's perfecting the pitch like an MLB The Show. He's doing that all the time. And the launch angle, you'd be like, oh, so he's hitting a lot of hard ground balls. He's doing that, which I will say has obviously been a Julio issue. But again, if you hit enough hard ground balls go for hits more than fly balls do. Obviously, you hit fly balls really hard and a lot of them go for home runs. That's where that can come in. But hitting ground balls hard, you know, it's not ideal. But if you're still hitting the ball hard, it's not the end of the world. But his launch angle is roughly 10, which is online-ish with where his career has evened out. And it's not a bad launch angle at all. That's a fine launch angle. So I am perplexed. I've looked at these numbers a lot, and I don't really know where to land yet. And some of it is definitely early season small sample wackiness. But I am going to take the good over the bad right now. And look at this hard hit rate, and something is working. Something that he did with driveline, the swing change, his approach, whatever it was, something is working. Now, is he running faster? Not at all. But do we care about that? I mean, we do care about it, but that wasn't an expectation coming into the year. He's still bottom 6th percentile of the league in sprint speed. But no, there's something with his swing that is working, and I think he's gotten a little unlucky this year. And the hard hit numbers reflect it. I mean, if his best hard hit rate of his career was his rookie year in 2019. He had a 42.6 hard hit rate. But even then, that was a way smaller sample. If you take the last, let's say from 2021 on, the best hard hit rate of his career was 2021 with a 38.9. It's 57.5 right now, even if that regresses to 45. Over the course of the season, that would still be his best by 7%. So I'm just going to take that. He's carrying more, but I'm just going to take the good right now. And he's hitting the ball really hard. So on the Ty France meter, I'm not ready to declare him back yet. Not at all. But the hard hit rate is really encouraging. The numbers aren't quite showing up in a big way yet, but I'm hoping that, if he keeps hitting the ball this hard, it's almost impossible to have those terrible numbers. So I'm just super encouraged to see where this takes us, because these stats confused the absolute hell out of me. So Ty France back meter, I'm going to go with no, not yet. I'm going to go with it's April, so not yet. And that was Ty France. I wanted to talk about Ty France because I looked at these numbers the other day and I was like, how does this make any sense? Like, these numbers cannot be correct, but they are, and it's perplexing. But I shared it with you, and you can do what you want with those numbers. And now it's time for the very chaotic part of the show where I read the notes that I took this week during Mariners games. So without further ado, I will do that for the remaining, 10 minutes of this show. First and foremost, Justin Hollander, and pretty optimistic from what it sounded like. Justin Hollander gave us some updates on some injuries. The ones I'll focus on specifically are Brian Wu and Matt Brash. Good updates here. They are both progressing. They're both throwing right now. I think Brash, I think he threw like live BP last week. And I think Brian Wu is now trending. I think he threw a bullpen last week as well. Justin Hollander said possibly they might be back by May 1st. I doubt they will rush them back. I feel like May 1st is aggressive. I mean, it's in 2 weeks, or I guess like more or less, 10, 11, 12 days. But May 1st feels aggressive, but it sounds like they're both on a similar track in terms of coming back to the team, and that was very good news. It sounds like they're like both their throwing sessions, the live BP from Brash and the bullpen from Brian Wu, both went really well. So that's really encouraging to hear, and I'm going to be interested to see how they handle the demotion promotions with that, because they'll go on rehab, obviously. Do they just straight up demote Emerson Hancock to the Rainiers? Do they keep him and run a 6-man rotation and just demote 2 relievers and call Brash up? Like, they demote 2 relievers, call Brash and Wu up, and just run a 6-man roto? I don't know. I'm going to be intrigued to see. And in the meantime, I mean, that would be, knock on wood, that would mean everyone's healthy by the time they come back, which is never a certainty in any sport, but especially not being a pitcher in baseball. So we'll see. But that was a really good update. Other next note, Dylan Moore looks phenomenal in the City Connect jerseys with yellow spikes. Excuse me. Oh, had to burp, but I'm not going to edit that one out. No, Dylan Moore. Dylan Moore has been awesome this year, by the way. I don't know if I've talked much about Dylan Moore. He's been great at the plate this year. I don't know if he's going to be this good all year, but I had big questions about this being a big year for him, because last year he was hurt, and when he came back, he didn't look great, and then he looked better late in the season, which was encouraging. I think if Dylan Moore is good, this team, you know, again, the team still needs like Julio, Polanco, Raleigh, Garver, Hanniger. They need all the guys at the top of the lineup to hit well still. But if Dylan Moore, as your main utility man, is hitting well, like we think and know Dylan Moore can hit, that's really good. And then in the game on Friday, the City Connects. I'm still not enamored with the City Connect jerseys. I like them. I don't dislike them. The black pants still just kind of throw me off. They kind of throw me for a loop. But Dylan Moore, not only does Dylan Moore look good in all jerseys, I'll say it, but he looks fun. He looks so good with the yellow spikes on. I think I'm more inclined to like the jersey if the guy is going to wear yellow spikes. I think that is the peak of their City Connect jerseys. Yellow shoes, black pants, and then the blue top and hat. I think that's the peak of style in the Mariners City Connect jerseys. Next note, Bryce Miller messing with timing. In his start last week, he did a little hitch. He had a little hitch in one of his pitches to get a K. I absolutely love that. It sounds like this entire pitching staff... maybe not Luis Castillo. Luis Castillo seems like he's just gifted and just goes up there and throws. I don't think he doesn't study the game, but the other guys, it sounds like it's like, oh my God, it sounds like all of them like nerd out about pitch shape and stuff like that. And like if Bryce Miller's going to start messing with timing, like look out. Like I love that. I love guys who mess with timing. Like Nestor Cortez, Marcus Stroman, Johnny Cueto is big into that. Nestor Cortez this week did the most absurd thing I've ever seen anyone do on a pitcher's mound. And he did a little fake pitch and then pitch. That was insane. I saw a lot of people getting mad at that. Loosen up if you're getting mad about that. It's not illegal, not a balk. He was in his motion. It was just funny. Like, get real, all right? Just relax a little bit. Baseball doesn't have to be serious all the time. That was great. Bryce Miller, messing with timing. Keep doing that, buddy. And while we're talking about Bryce Miller, I will say his splitter has been so interesting this year. His splitter is getting... I don't have the stats, nor have I even looked to validate this. His splitter is getting, like, equal parts glove side and arm side movement. And I heard him talking about this. He's basically... like, he has his grip down for this splitter. And he's basically like, well, with the splitter, you throw it like a fastball. That's the point of a splitter. You throw it as much like a fastball as you can. So it looks like a fastball coming out of the hand, and then it just dies. And Bryce was like, yeah, I'm doing that. And then whichever way it takes it, well, you know, that's how it goes. He's more focused on it getting really good vertical movement, which is very obviously really important from the splitter. But if you look at, again, like we just talked about Logan Gilbert, His splitter gets exclusively arm side movement, which most splitters do. They skew closer to like what a circle changeup looks like, but a splitter, just the way they're thrown and the way the air catches it. But with Bryce Miller's, and he's not exclusive to this, but with his, it's like sometimes the air catches it right. And I don't know if it's seam shifted wake or whatever it is. I don't know. Or just the way he throws the ball. I don't know what it is, but sometimes it goes glove side. Sometimes it looks more like a cut fastball. It's really strange. And I thought he might be changing the grip a little bit. Like I thought he might be gripping it like a splitter, but cutting it a bit so it gets that glove side moving, but he's not. He just said he's throwing it normal, and whatever way the freaking air takes it, it's going. It's pretty hilarious. But that was interesting from this week that I noticed. My next note, hey, Luke Raley, he's fucking chopped liver, huh? He's old news. Now, I talked about this in the episode last week. I was like, Canzone and Raley on the same team, like that just kind of feels redundant. And then Canzone answered that by making a great catch in left field, but having zero disregard for his own body. and running into the wall at full speed. I don't even think he knew the wall was there. It looked like the man thought he had 15 more feet to run after he caught that ball. But no, he slammed into the wall, and he has, I think, a sprained AC joint, which is like a month plus injury, which really sucks because he was having such a good start to the year. But that kind of addresses my Luke Raley problem, where now he's going to get a lot more playtime, and they're not really redundant anymore if one of them is off the roster. So we wish Canzone well. That really sucks that he is that he's hurt, especially just for him personally. Like, he knows he was starting the year really well, and Scott was putting him in the lineup. Scott, I mean, if you're hitting well, Scott's going to put you in the lineup, and he was doing that. So it sucks that he got hurt, but Luke Raley's been playing more now. Played a little first base, playing in the outfield. I don't know. It just still, with both of them on the roster, it felt so weird because you want to play both of them, but Mitch Haniger's also been hitting really well, so you can't play both of them because you're not going to put them in center, or Julio is. Raley played center the other day when Julio got the day off. I should just talk about that. Julio, they gave Julio the day off as a mental break, which is good. That's probably good. That's a good thing. Sometimes he just gets too focused. Feels like he's pressing. Definitely just chasing everything. They give him a mental day. It's like, you're not going to play today unless we really need you to pinch run in the ninth. And they did that. And he pinch ran in the ninth. And you know where I'm going with this. He got picked off to end the game. That was maybe the most frustrating game of the year. That was very emblematic of how the year had gone up until that point. It was the last three innings of that game, in a one-run game, they ended innings, ground into double play, ground into double play. Julio pinch run and then immediately gets picked off to end the game. It was absurd. And it was like, why? I understand. I think it was it. Who did he pinch run for? Cal or Mitch Garver? He pinch ran for a slow guy. It wasn't like a bad decision. But you said before the game, he's absolutely not going to play. It's a complete mental day for him. It's going to be good. And then you get him out there, and he gets picked off. That is awful for him. If you're going to not play the guy, stick with it. Like, maybe to win the game, it was your best option to put him in because he's really fast, right? And it was a one-run game. I understand. But if you're going to say to the guy, we're not going to play you at all today, just relax, and then you get him off his ass, and him, maybe he was so relaxed, he got picked off. You know, I that was so frustrating. I can't believe the game ended that way. It really was emblematic of Julio's, specifically his season and how it's gone so far. So that really sucked. Next note on the topic of the Canzone injury. Jonathan Class A is up. There was some questions once he went down. Once Canzone went out, Brian Anderson was pulled from the Rainiers game in like inning three. And everyone on Twitter was like, they're calling up Brian Anderson of all people. Why? That doesn't make any sense. I was trying to rationalize it, but I couldn't. It made zero sense to me, but they're not doing that. And then since they brought up Samad already, I thought they were going to bring him up, but I don't think you can demote and bring up within 10 days. I think that's a rule. And so I don't think they could have brought up Samad again. And they said, hey, Jonathan Class A, let's do it. Get up here. And he's been a spark. They brought him up and they swept the Reds. Jonathan Class A is 3-0 on his young career. And he's just been a spark plug. He has put together some pretty good at-bats. We've seen how fast he is. He appears to play left field pretty well. He stole a base the other day. His first hit was an RBI. He came in with a really big RBI double the other in one of the games during the Reds series as well. He's just looked awesome. It's been like a breath of fresh air that maybe this team just kind of needed, like a young guy like that to come up. I think that was part, I think, of why 2021, 2022, and even last year, I don't know. Last year, they were just established and pretty good. But 2021, 2022, you had all these debuts of these top prospects. And I think that does just give your team an extra oomph, an extra little chip on its shoulder. I mean, we saw the Reds last season, all the rookies that came up, and how they almost made the playoffs. The Diamondbacks had a couple impact rookies, and look, they went to the World Series. I mean, it just, same with the Rangers. Sometimes you need to have some rookies come up and really ignite the fellas, because there hasn't been a top prospect rookie come up for this team since basically Julio made his debut. I mean, you had that and then Kirby coming up. Otherwise, it was the farm was pretty depleted at the top level of the farm, I should say. And now more guys are moving to the system, and Jonathan Classe has worked his ass off to get here. I remember him getting signed. I was in high school. He got signed to the Mariners, and I was keeping up with the Mariners pretty heavily at that point. And all I read about this guy was he's 80 grade speed with just question marks at the plate. And since then, he has added so much to his frame, so much muscle. He was a 20-20 guy in the minors last season. I think it was 20 home runs, 79 stolen bases or something crazy like that. His speed's still there. He has really worked his ass off to be a good power-hitting switch hitter. For a relatively small dude, he's very muscular, and the biggest question marks are still just like swing and miss, and I think we're going to see that this year. I think he's probably going to strike out a fair amount. But again, strikeouts aren't all bad if you're really impacting the baseball and like getting stolen bases. And he also just provides so much speed, and this team without Julio is not fast at all. Like, the second fastest guy on this team after Julio is like Luke Rayleigh. And now with Jonathan Classe up, you at least have more speed on the base path, because like J.P. Crawford's not fast. Ty isn't fast. Mitch Haniger's not very fast anymore. I don't even think he even was that fast. Luke Rayleigh's surprisingly fast. Kyle Raleigh, not fast. Mitch Garver, not fast. Dominic Canzone, even not really fast. That was a big thing I identified in the team last year, was speed and their lack of it besides Julio. And Jonathan Classe at least gives them that. That's what also like Samad Taylor gave them. They have a bunch of speed on the Rainiers, which is at least encouraging to bring up. Oh, Dylan Moore. Dylan Moore's pretty fast. I'll give him his credit. But Jonathan Classe, been really fun to watch. If he continues, and he's been playing every day in left field, if he continues hitting well, I don't know, man. I mean, Dom's going to be out for a while, so Jonathan Classe might be up for a while. This gives an opportunity to him, and again, Luke Rayleigh, I need to see more, man. I need to see you really socking dingers if you want to stay on the squad. What else? I have more notes, but I'm reaching the time where I need to cut it. It's almost time to start having a conversation about Luis Castillo. I wrote that down before his most recent start, and he looked great, so we'll put that on the back burner for now. I already talked about Ty France. I wanted to pose this. Like, imagine this offseason if the Mariners signed Nelson Cruz and Robinson Cano. When they signed them back a decade ago, but put those versions of those guys, this offseason signings, on with this current team, this current core, how fucking good would the Mariners be with those two guys, with this core? I mean, I was thinking about that, and it made me sad, because obviously we'll never see that, but imagine. Wouldn't that be cool? One more thing before I wrap. One more thing. The Salmon Run, I've been keeping up with it. I don't have the standings in front of me. I know Humpy still hasn't won. I gotta ask, you know, with all the gambling stuff going on in sports, is Humpy match fixing? Can I go to the Muckleshoot Casino and bet on the Salmon Run? I don't think you could, but I bet there's some people doing this individually in their friend groups, and Humpy's got to have crazy odds going into every race. I would put $5 on Humpy every race until he wins, just so I get a huge payout. Is Humpy betting on himself to lose? Is he match fixing? You got to ask that question. He loses every race, and I know the Mariners wrote that into his lore, but it's suspicious. That's all I'm saying. But we're about at 50 minutes, so thank you. I'm going to wrap. Thank you so much for listening. I will be back probably next week. If I'm ever not back weekly, I will update my Twitter. So if you're listening to this and you don't follow my Twitter, it's at ChaosBall1977, I think is the app. But you can just look up ChaosBall Podcast on Twitter, and it should come up. Follow me if you don't. you should follow me. That's where most of the podcast news comes out of. And I live tweet Mariners games every time I watch a Mariners game, which is most games. So find me there. Because some weeks it might just be like, I'm not recording this week. Some weeks is just normal. And the first 3 weeks of the season, it's been great. They've had three straight Thursday off days. And that's the day I really like to record. It fits the perfectly with my schedule. So thank you, Mariners, for doing that for me. That's really appreciative. You didn't have to schedule your games around my podcast schedule, but I appreciate that you did. But with that, I'm signing off. I will see you maybe next week, maybe in 2 weeks. But more importantly, have a good rest of your week and go Mariners.